I appreciate your good attention. Is it all right with you if we just go straight to the end now? Did you get enough muffins to last? Oh, is that all right with you? Because if I don't, I see the handwriting on the wall. We'll be really rushing at the end. So if that's okay, if you need to leave, go ahead. But we'll go after it here. All right. We have looked at the principles of marriage. And everybody remember what those are? What's the first one? Oneness. Okay. What's the next one? Promise. Very good. That covenant. The third one? Procreation. Having the solid marriage for godly seed. And then number four? Picture. All right. How do our dating principles and everything about dating fit into that picture? It doesn't, folks. Now, may I remind you that at this time, only 30% of American children have two parents? May I remind you that we're even questioning that you're born with a gender? Can I remind you that that there are a very small percentage of young people from 20 to 29 that are actually getting married, but yet are fully involved in relationships? On and on I could go. I just want to submit to you that dating has not really promoted godly Christian values. Okay, I feel like it's sort of ridiculous what I'm saying. We all understand that. But it honestly, dating has had a big part of it because dating came out of the freedom that came in a secular mindset, a humanistic mindset, all about us, that really began to dominate in the 1900s. And, you know, this tells me, too, folks, if we would seek God for revival, first of all, our churches would be different. And we, when you're in the presence of God, you realize the importance of different things. You know, people that are going through revival never give the world the benefit of the doubt. Never. And secondly, if we had a move of God, it would, again, help our culture. I'm not worried about America. I mean, I want to see it come back to the Lord. The issue is the churches in America need to come back to the Lord. All right. Number five here, a better way of getting there, courtship examples. I'm not going to take a long time here just because I do want to get to the practical aspects. But Adam and Eve, who realized that Adam needed a helpmeet? God did. Now, sometimes you hear all these things about Adam going around thinking he needed a helpmeet. He may have, but it was God that came up with the idea. He created man, male and female. Adam was doing what? God's will. When Eve was brought to him, he was having dominion over the garden and the whole world. God prepared Eve for Adam while Adam was asleep. God brought Eve to Adam, and Adam didn't have any trouble loving her. The two cleaved together, and the two became one flesh. That's all right there in the Scripture. It worked out fine. Now, Old Testament betrothal. A lot could be made of this. And these are principles that are helpful because the New Testament, especially Christ and the church, is able to be seen on the basis of that. Betrothal means to fix upon by agreement or appointment, to meet at a date and an appointed time. And so back in those days, in the Old Testament period, when it came to a young man and a young woman, there was definitely parental control, but it was also the consent of children. The friend of the bridegroom negotiated. A dowry was paid. Now, every time I had daughters get married, I really would love to go back to the Old Testament method. But then I thought about it when my sons got married. Maybe it just balances out. Okay. But, you know, the dowry is a pretty serious deal. That's the point. This isn't in and out of relationships. In other words, the men in the family said, you don't mess with our daughter or our sister. Now it gets perverted, of course, in pagan countries with dowries and so forth. But back then, it was a very sacred matter. Formal ceremonies, legal documents, called husband and wife. You remember when Joseph found Mary was with child? He had to get a divorce at that point, because he was betrothed but not married yet. And it was a big deal. That's why I think the math, personally, just for this is free, but that's what I think the Matthew exception is talking about, because that was a big deal to the Jews. And so that's how serious courtship would merge right into betrothal. And I'm telling you, this wasn't something taken lightly. A man exempt from military service, if the betrothed husband died, the woman was considered a widow, broken only on the grounds of adultery, and lasted about 1 year for the purpose of preparing for the wedding. It's beautiful when you read about Jewish accounts of how all of that worked. You can also look at Isaac and Rebekah. It gives us some insight, not complete because we don't have the whole story, but you had a godly man, Isaac, meditating in the field. Parental initiation, definitely Abraham with Eliezer, most likely his steward. Prayer was seeking God's will and blessing. Abraham knew that Isaac could not marry one that was in the land there like would happen. Rebekah's character was tested. How was her character tested? If she could water all of those camels. Okay, do you realize what it takes to water a camel? And you know what it takes to pull up a big one of those big jars and do all of that? I'm telling you, I wouldn't get in a fist fight with Rebekah, you know. Not exactly the picture you have here, I realize that. But anyway, very practical, her willingness to help, her servant's attitude, and so forth. Very clearly, being in the way God led me, I could look at this passage, but we don't have time. I think you're familiar with it. Parental confirmation on both sides. Consent of the bride, she had to be willing, leaving home, and then they had a wonderful, tranquil, comforting union. And then, probably most significant, is Christ and the church, built upon Old Testament betrothal. And let me just give you a little bit of this here. 2 Corinthians 11:2, I am jealous over you, for I have espoused you, betrothed you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin. Folks, right now, we are in the betrothal period. The marriage supper of the Lamb doesn't occur till future. The trumpet sounding is the indication that it's time. Study prophecy from a Jewish perspective. It just makes it come alive. Aren't you glad that Christ's betrothal to us is permanent? That it's that serious? Purpose of the church is to reveal truth about Christ and the church. I've already mentioned that. Who chose the bride? Well, the Father, according as He has chosen us in Him before the foundation of the world. The Father sent the friend of the groom. Who's the friend of the groom? John the Baptist. You can read that there in John 3:29, Matthew 18:11. The Father sent the Son, for the Son of Man has come to save them which was lost. The Son obeyed the Father's will. I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. The groom initiated the love. We love him because he first loved us. What was the dowry? The blood of Christ. Wonderful, precious verses, 1 Peter 1. Now, Christ is a way preparing a place for us. And that would be, by the way, in the Father's house. It's interesting. And then we have the marriage supper and celebration. The bride will be clothed in Revelation 19:8 in white garments, and we spend eternity. There is no doubt that our marriage lasts forever. Now, folks, let me just say this. Just study those. I went over that quickly. If we are to be a picture, then ought not marriage be approached extremely seriously? Okay. I mean, this, honestly, preacher, you could preach 5 messages on this from this standpoint, and it is amazing. So people say, well, you know, courtship's not in the Bible. Well, you've got to understand, courtship was the preliminary introducing of a young man and young woman to see if they should be betrothed. It was not some long, drawn-out situation. And then engagement was extremely serious and legal, leading to an absolutely certain marriage that was not to be broken. And there was no divorce hardly at all in those days among godly Jewish people and then Christians. So very important. Now, another just picture here is the Jewish shidduchim. It's a process of dating and courtship for the purpose of marriage. And so they follow that even today in the more conservative circles about preliminary investigation. And they don't introduce them until they're satisfied about all of that. Of course, they're missing the spiritual standpoint. And so, but let me just go to the Christian marriage ceremony. Who enters first in most ceremonies? The groom. Okay. The bride is given away, if the father is alive and functioning, by the father. Still, we do that. That, to me, is the most touching part of the wedding. That poor father stands there. He is as poor as a church mouse now because he's paying for that wedding. And there's his daughter that he's loved all, and he's going to give it to this guy, her to that guy, you know. By the way, Dad, you better know you're in the will of God at that point. It's a very sobering moment. I've gone through that standing there three times, and it gets you every time. And you, those of you who have little girls, you better be listening closely. You want to know her mother and I do. We mean it. And then, why do we have permission to kiss the bride? Sort of dumb today, isn't it? But not for believers. Over and over, a couple hundred young sets of marriages, it's the first time there's been physical contact between the man and woman. And believe me, I'm the one closest to the kiss. Some of them aren't the greatest in the world. But you know what? By the reception, they really got the program going. You know, it's amazing. You don't have to. I wish my brother Jim could tell you this story. He had followed courtship pretty closely. By his time, my dad and I had really prayed about it, and thankfully God had been good to me. And so he was the next one. And so he had no physical contact. They hadn't been without a chaperone. I mean, the whole thing was done right. And so he got to thinking, she wants the kiss during the wedding ceremony. Now, formal ceremonies aren't supposed to have the kiss, but the kiss is a good thing in Christian circles. And so he said, I was just getting ready, looking at myself in the mirror, thinking, what am I going to do? You know, I don't have a clue about what to do here, because he had kept himself completely all the way along. He said, I thought about maybe kissing the mirror. That grossed me out. Wish you could hear him say that. He elaborates on it. I mean, he has teens just doubling over the way he talks about it. But he said, you know what? And I was right there. I was about 3 feet away. He said, you may kiss the bride. I took her in my arms. I knew exactly what to do. He said, I was pretty good. He was. It was embarrassing. He was always the romantic inside. You don't have to have experience to know what to do. It's a beautiful thing. But even the awkward ones, I love it because, like I said, by the time we get to the reception, it's embarrassing. So it's good stuff. But where did all this come from? From a Christian perspective. It's courtship. It's just what it was. And now we just have it because that's the form that we do. Let's bring back the meaning of our wedding ceremonies. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. True virgin, dad in control, will of God, young man's ready. There's power in those services. I'm telling you, I've seen hundreds of people in an audience just with tears in their eyes because God's hand is on this. And these young people, I remember one time, one marriage, I mentioned about Cameroon last night, one of our Cameroon young people, a big map of Cameroon, and they made that part of their whole ceremony. And I'm telling you, it was a sacred. They were giving themselves for the lives of God's people. And this man was the first one to hear about that shooting. And as he talked to me a couple days ago, we're ascending church, and he said, boy, we have been through it, but we are determined to reach the Fulani Muslim community, and just really stirring. That's what it's about. Our lives are not our own. That's what we want marriage to be. All right. I got an hour and 10 minutes to talk about courtship. You ready? We're going to talk about the principles. I want you to get this down for sure. Then I'm going to get into some practical stuff. I'm going to give you from my perspective, and you apply it as you will, but don't cheat on the principles. okay? And I'll tell you which one is really critical. You with me? Okay. You know what happens is everybody listens to my suggestions, and that becomes the seminar. All right, take the biblical principles as the seminar, and my suggestions are, I think, pretty well founded, but let's stay on the basis of Scripture. All right, definition. Remember that big, long, unwieldy dating one? This one's worse, okay? Two fathers initiating, which is key, and controlling or managing. I like the word almost better because control can be misunderstood for arranged marriage. Managing the introduction of their marriageable children to their families and to each other for the sole purpose of confirming God's will concerning their marriage while maintaining all purity. Now, you'll notice initiation of parents, management by parents. It's all about God's will, and we want to maintain mental, emotional, and physical purity. Sound biblical? I believe you'll find that it is. All right, principle number one, purity. Now remember, marriage principles, partnership, promise, a covenant, procreation, a godly seed, and a picture of Christ in the church. Dating is pleasure, personal choice, periodic relationships, and physical intimacy and aloneness. Now, where does courtship stand in all of that? This is the key motive behind courtship. It is the desire to save oneself completely for the oneness of marriage. And I've already talked about that, so I think that's understood. The principle acknowledges that purity is not the natural state to which the heart, a human heart, resorts. Young people, you say, well, can't my parents trust me? No. I don't trust me. There's accountability. My phone sitting over there has controls on it, total control. I could not sit there and go to the internet. Say, Pastor, why not? Because I don't trust me, and I want to have a testimony. You say, that's a lot of trouble. It's a lot more trouble if I started seeing something that I ought not see. And I got precious young people. Now I've got you folks. I tell you, I did fine with a dumb phone. That's a pretty fancy dumb phone now. And you say, well, should we be that careful? I'm telling you, folks, men shouldn't trust themselves. I remember one guy saying, "Yo, Pastor, I don't need to put these controls on my phone, you know, and da 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 da. We need to have the spiritual maturity," and I agree, and I believe I could handle that. But now that I found out, well, that was a joke, and I knew it was when he was telling me. And young people, just be glad for protection. As I told you, you're at a very key time in your life. And God has made it to where this is very strong. You want your parents to help you maintain it for the right time. It'll be beautiful when it's the right time. Don't mess it up. So the principle acknowledges that purity is not the natural state to which the human heart resorts. Purity must be deliberately and carefully guarded. Young people on their own are extremely vulnerable and must be protected and directed by God-ordained authority. And by the way, it's not just your parents. Listen to your pastor. God has given you your pastor, and he will be a great help to you with your parents. Your parents are here because they trust the pastor. The two work hand in hand. It's a great thing. The heart of man is cursed. It is deceitful and desperately wicked beyond understanding. So our purity must be maintained throughout one's entire personality. Single-mindedness, single-heartedness, that's the emotional, and an untouched body. All right. Principle number one is purity. Are we together on this? Is that biblical? Okay, let's get it settled. And I think, young people, you've got to settle it too. If you have any value for yourself or God, purity is important. Now, right now, you ought to say, Lord, I may be struggling with some of these concepts, but I want to stay pure. I'd say that to the Lord even right now. Then, principle number two is parental responsibility. Parental authority and direction is the God-ordained means for young people to find their life's mate. That's clearly the example of the Old and New Testament, and even the example of Christ in regard to his relationship with us. Quoted Genesis 2:24 a number of times. When does a man leave his father and mother at age 21? Nope. When he leaves his father and his mother. Now, let me get into this here. First, and then next, Exodus 20:12. Honor thy father and mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And the Lord Jesus was quite strong. Jesus said unto them in Matthew 22:37, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. All right, this is a statement of the Ten Commandments put together. The first table of the law is love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind. Those would be commandments 1 to 4 for sure, right? Love thy neighbor as thyself are commandments 6 through 10, very clearly. Murder, stealing, and so forth. What's sitting between those two tables of the law? Honor thy father and thy mother. The word for honor is exactly the same word used in the Old Testament to honor God. So to truly love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, you have got to love and honor your parents. And to be able to have self-control to love your neighbor as yourself, you've got to follow your parents and their instructions on overcoming self and being able to be a servant to others. So when the Lord restated this, right in the middle of that is this, both ways. You show me a kid rebelling against his parents, he's going to have a terrible relationship with God. You know, right now you're rebelling somebody with your parents, you and God aren't really close, I can tell you. And you won't treat other people right. You show me somebody that's not treating his parents right, they're not going to treat other people. Well, they may be really friendly and nice, when it gets right down to it, they're going to get what they want. That's just the way it works. So this matter of dating really fits right into this. I mean, courtship is allowing parents to have the right place. And then in Matthew 15, the Lord Jesus said, quoting from the law, he that curses father or mother shall die the death. Whoa. That's the Lord Jesus. That's not Old Testament, folks. That's the Gospels. And so it's very important that we understand. Then, of course, the epistles, Ephesians 6, 1 and 2, first verses, my kids learn. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the final commandment with promise. And so the Apostle Paul clearly puts it into obedience equals honoring. And so clearly parents have authority. I remember when my youngest son, my fifth of six children, was helping my wife. She was just a little bitty guy. They were cleaning out the basement. They had a lot of stuff because my father-in-law worked with novelties. He was a fireman, so he sold them on the side. Really, frankly, helped my kids get through some of their education. He worked hard for that. And I really, he's with the Lord today, a godly man. But there was this huge tropical bird. And my son had never seen it. Wow, I mean, it's multicolored. He was just thrilled. And my wife said, yes, Daniel, this is a parrot. He goes, ah, children, obey your parrots. So we had a little more work to do on the proper exegesis of Ephesians 6, verse 1. But anyway, he got it down, believe me. In Galatians chapter 4, you have some help for young men. Now, I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be Lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed by the father. A little window in to perspective, the responsibility of fathers to prepare their sons for manhood. The term adoption doesn't speak of adoption like we know it. It was a ceremony that occurred when a father felt that the son should be acknowledged as a full-fledged citizen and as the one that was the heir to the estate that he owned. He would then be in charge of the slaves and so forth if he was a man of any standing, and the servants. And so it oftentimes didn't happen until 30 years of age, you know, or that type of thing. The Lord Jesus didn't start his ministry till 30. That age isn't really the issue here. But the fact is this, the father needs to have the heart of the son. That's what you have there in Proverbs, son, give me thine heart. to where the child is developed and trained by the father and under tutors and under governors and school teachers and other people, and he isn't in that place of independence until the time appointed by the father. So we get a little window into that. And what's more important than who a young man marries? And I remember when I was now assistant to the dean of men at the college where I was at, and my father called me because we were right in the middle of a courtship, the courtship, or with my wife, and I won't go through the story, but he said, "Now, son, there's something I want you to do." And he said, "Now, I haven't given you an order for a while, but I am exercising my fatherhood now. I want you to do it." It was quite an amazing thing he was asking me to do. And I obeyed him, because I was still under my father, hadn't gotten married yet, and glad to do that. Because you don't leave your father and mother till then. You cleave it to your wife. So, young men, you don't need to be a mama's boy. Following this doesn't mean that you are just at 22 years of age, having to be told by your parents everything to do. No, you should have it inside of you, and you ought to be functioning, but you ought to be under their authority. I had totally committed to my dad. I don't care if I didn't get married till I was 30. I was going to follow his counsel, and no way was I going to go against my father. I told him that. Now, he developed in me, thankfully, some maturity and independence. But boy, I'm telling you, I remember in college, I did not want to think of being expelled. That would not have been fun to go home. And that would have been a bad deal. He would have loved me anyway. But I mean, I was under the authority. And I tell you, young men, 18 does not make a man. When you're 30, you look back at 18 and say, "Whoa, why in the world did they give us the rights at 18? You'll change your course." 21 does not necessarily make a man, but you ought to be acting like a man. You know when you need your parents most? Between 18 and 25. Man, am I glad I had my parents' help. Those were big, transforming times, and my dad and I became best of friends during that time. Great relationship until he died. I wouldn't trade that for anything. So keep that in mind. But there is a definitely responsibility of the father. The problem is not, many times, young men rebelling against their dads. It's dads being wimpy. Okay, so let's take leadership, men, in a good, wholesome, real relationship way. Now, in Numbers chapter 30, it's pretty clear for girls from the Old Testament perspective. Let me just look that up here very quickly. Numbers chapter 30 speaks of the vows. When a person made a vow in the theocracy of Israel, it had to be done. Period. Case closed. It was law. Verse 3, if a woman also vow a vow unto the Lord and bind herself by a bond, being in her father's house in her youth, and her father hear her vow, and her bond wherewith she hath bound her soul, and her father shall hold his peace at her, then all her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she hath bound her soul shall stand. So he doesn't say anything, just like with a man, that daughter is obligated. This is under the law here. But if her father disallow her in the day that he heareth, not any of her vows or of her bonds wherewith she hath bound her soul shall stand, and the Lord shall forgive her because her father disallowed her. And so he could if the daughter was in the home, he could say, "No, you made that promise, but that's disallowed. Gone. Vow's not there." If you'll read the next few verses, exact same wording for married women with their husbands. So you have that same responsibility of a father with his daughter as a son with father with a daughter, I'm sorry, as a husband with his wife. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, you have also that a father should not feel constrained to have his daughter, who is a virgin, have to marry. There's a lot of pressure to do that, but he could keep her. In other words, it was under his control. And you study biographies such as Hudson Taylor and Adoniram Judson, and you'll see back in those days, especially in Christian culture, there was full responsibility by either parents, or if there weren't parents, by the next closest relative of this matter of marriage. Now, let me stop here. Here's the difference between a lot of what people think of courtship or Christianized dating and biblical courtship. Now, obviously, purity is the driving force. But parental responsibility is the key. Young people, you don't start establishing a relationship and then put that on your parents. You see, when my children gave me their hearts, they promised me that even through looks and communication and so forth, they would not get something obviously going between them and a young lady or a young man, and then ask me to get on board. Now, they might notice somebody and talk to me about it, certainly, and I can tell, whoa, you know, they're really thinking about this, but they had not attracted the person, the person would be surprised by it. That's it. That's the key difference between Christianized dating, that some people call courtship, and biblical courtship. To get the heart of your child. Because what happens is, it takes a nanosecond to all of a sudden your heart go. It really doesn't take long. Kaboom, you know. So you've got to make a willful choice, young people, to give your parents your heart, and you may get excited about somebody, but you're not going to let that person know that until the right time under your parents' leadership. Everybody listening to me? If that's all I said for the rest of the seminar, that's the key. Okay. I remember we were getting into courtship principles, and in my situation, I'm in my senior year of college, about to graduate. A young lady that was a godly young lady who is serving the Lord today. I noticed her, and I thought, you know, I really think this is probably the right one. So I asked my parents, and they were going to come down anyway, and so I arranged it for them to meet. And so I came back out afterwards, and I said, well, what do you think, Mom? And my mom said, no. I said, Mom, and I acted like a junior hire for just a moment, I must confess. Sorry, junior hires. I said, Mom, you only met her that first time. And she said, I know, but I just know. My dad looked at me and he said, son, you promised. It was a faith decision. I said, okay, I'll drop it. That was hard. My mom was totally right. Now, if I had gotten attention from her and started developing a relationship, I would have had a problem. And maybe my mother would have capitulated. And I would have definitely married the wrong one. I mean, my wife is the key person for me, no doubt about it. Everything about my ministry, she has played a key role in that. And it was such a different situation when that happened. So young people, give your parents your heart. Make that promise to them. I'm not going to try to get the attention of a young lady or a young man, get something going, until we've had a chance to pray at the right time, and if you say no, I'm going to trust you. And I had a young man in my office just the other day, and he says, you know, my dad told me a few months ago, I had talked about this young lady, and I was really thinking it was the right one. And my dad said no, and he said, I cried for 2 days. It was embarrassing. He said, the girl didn't know, but he really let his heart go, and his dad said no. But he said, I have grown more in the last 3 months, and he says, I'm waking up. Thank God for my dad. Now, that's deep stuff, folks. That's not surface emotion, surface relationships. And a godly dad, and he took responsibility, and I appreciate that. I didn't even know exactly how to counsel the boy at the time, but I was very thankful. All right, principle number three. Now, remember, these principles are what I want you to get. Purity, parental responsibility, and now preparedness. This is the initial prerequisite for courtship. It follows directly from the belief that God has designed intimate male-female relationship to occur only in the bounds of marriage, and therefore one must not begin pursuing such a relationship unless fully prepared to handle the responsibilities. All right, that sort of eliminates, I'd say that probably eliminates junior high dating. Okay. Yeah, I think it does. I think it eliminates high school dating. Amen. And, of course, at BCM, it eliminates freshman, sophomore dating, too. You know, I'm not saying there's a magical thing there. But I'm telling you, every junior or 20-year-old would tell you,
That's true.
I wasn't ready. There's no way around it, you know. And so it is interesting. But the idea is that if you get into a courtship, that's not to develop a relationship. That's to know if you can have a relationship. And engagement needs to be, as best you know how, really the right thing by the grace of God, because you don't want to enter into a bunch of relationships. That's the whole idea. So the young man needs to be spiritually led, parents, to where they need to know what it means to be filled with the Spirit. I mean, parents, you need to know, wow, my son is a man of God. I am really challenged by him. He's got spiritual discernment. He knows what it means to follow the voice of the Lord. I have confidence in him as a man of God. Should you let the family of a girl have anything less than a husband for her that is a man of God? Isn't that really our responsibility? You know, don't be asking for a girl's hand until you know you can trust your son to be spiritually discerning and mature. It should be that maturity. Learns how to make the right choices, not the wrong choices. Has knowing what God's called them to do. No way should a young man think about marriage until he knows what God's calling in his life and what he's going to do, and he's prepared for it or close to being prepared for it. I know this flies in the face of normal thinking, but believe me, this is the way it was back in courtship days. Case closed. That's the way it worked. Vocationally, need to be trained. Financially, no debt. Be able to at least have basic housing. And should have been trained in how to be a father. Does that seem unreasonable? Now, all of you men with little girls, wouldn't you like to make sure your prospective husband for her has at least these basics? That should be how you ask questions. And that's how what you need to be looking for. Young lady, spiritually a woman of God, knows how to stay steady, even with the emotional ups and downs, loves her the Lord her God, is genuinely committed to do whatever, has great maturity, has character, knows how to make the best choices, not cave into the flesh, not lazy. Laziness is the flesh. Wasting time is the flesh. Knows how to conquer that, knows how to be a wife, has learned how to communicate, understands the different facets of being a wife, knows how to keep home, keep house, knows the basics of homemaking, and has the right attitude toward that. And has been prepared to be a mother. It's not easy to be a mother. And so before, gentlemen, you got a son that's looking to marry somebody, you better find out those things. You know, better to wait a little while. You know, I tell girls when, you know, they get past 22, they get a little frantic, you know. And I tell them, listen, just be patient. Let God grow up the buzzard, you know. Let him turn into an eagle, you know. We need a transformation. Don't rush this thing. I mean, you can't be the one to grow up your husband. Let God do it. Let his parents do it. And we laugh about it, but it's true. I'm telling you. So be patient. You know, I'm 24. I'm going to be missed. I don't know. God hasn't forgotten you. And it'll happen at the right time, and let God work. So that's a pretty important principle, don't you think, preparedness? And by the way, that is historically what was held until the early 1900s. And then principle number four is patience. This is a matter of waiting on God. God does it. God does it. Can you trust? If you can't trust God for your mate, you're not going to trust God for many things. Isaiah 64:4, for since the beginning of the world, men have not heard nor perceived by the ear, neither hath the eye seen, O God, beside thee, what he has prepared for them that waiteth for him. It's a wonderful thing. Psalm 139:16, thine eyes did see my substance, yet being imperfect, and in thy book aloud all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there were none of them. God knows. As we've already seen, God noticed the need for a helpmeet, not Adam. God put it all together. So the heart of a young person ought to be characterized by a real rest in the Lord concerning who they're going to marry. All right, now let's go over these four principles. What's the first one? You remember? Purity. Purity. Big, important one. All right, what's the next one? Parental responsibility. That's when there is a full agreement between child and parent that they will not initiate on their own behind the backs of the parents of relationship. By the way, you've got to make that commitment because that's real easy to do. Really easy. Okay. And so you've got to get it set. Younger you are to get it set. I remember my oldest daughter, Elizabeth, when she was just a little 5-year-old girl, we used to talk about it, you know, and I'd put her to bed every night. I took her on a little date at 5 years of age, went down to the Chicago Symphony. It's pretty elaborate for a little girl. In fact, it worked out real good. They saw we didn't have very good seats, and the bass player saw me, and she was in dress with a flower on, so he put us in some really nice seats there at Symphony Hall, so that was neat. I went to a German restaurant, Berkoff's down there in downtown. And so we talked about this, and she said, "Daddy, I will do that," and she did. 40 years of age now. But I'm telling you, as a little girl, she gave me her heart, and my other children did too. And there's nothing better than that. I never went through a period of rebellion with my kids, but we got that settled early on because so much rebellion comes in with this boy-girl stuff. It really does. And it's a sweet thing, and she waited, and, oh, we would talk about, you know, what's God doing and so forth. And then at 25, she didn't get married till she was 25 or 26, I don't remember. But anyway, so sweet. He's now the vice president of our college. And he actually came to do that before they were ever interested in each other. And God just prepared the way. We couldn't have done any better. And what a joy she is to me. And so that's a real blessing. So it's we need to just do all we can not to let the world's corrupt system keep us away from what is important. And so these principles are very, very, very important. Okay? Now, do you feel like those four principles will get you to the marriage principles a little better? Let's go over those again. You remember what the first one was? No, I'm sorry. Marriage principles. Partnership. Okay. And what's the next one?
Promise.
All right. Now, a oneness. And a permanent covenant. Dating principles or courtship principles? I think courtship principles. The next one is procreation. Knowing how to have the right relationship between parent and child. Where are you going to get that? By giving your heart to your parents and living a pure life. And then what was number four? Picture. Look at these four principles. Purity. Parental responsibility. Preparedness. And patience. I want you to meditate on those. Now, I'm going to get to some practical things now, but that really is, to me, the key. Every parent here and every child here needs to realize this is not somebody's idea. Purity is not my idea. Parental responsibility is not my idea. Preparedness is not my idea. And patience waiting on God is certainly not my idea. Are those biblical truths? Young people, get it as a biblical conviction in your heart. Before you get all wound up about little details, get that settled. And remember, which one of them really separates Christianized dating from biblical courtship? Which one of those four principles? Which one of the four courtship principles? Parental responsibility, giving the heart and not starting a relationship prematurely. Everybody hear me on that? Okay, that's it. That's it. If you want one point, that's it. Get that one down. You'll probably be okay. Okay, but we got to deal with the practical. You know, where do we go from here? So now I'll roll up my sleeves and do what I can. Courtship practices. Period number one starts with childhood. Got lots of kids here. All right, so let's start early on. You develop full godly character, the goal of childhood, and to please the Lord through ministry. They need to have a perspective that their life is not their own. Every child in here is a mighty servant of the Lord. Once they're saved, the Spirit of God indwells them. God's got a purpose. They are to be world changers. God didn't bring them in to make a bunch of money and just live a decent Christian life. Do you agree with me? Okay, you better get that settled as a parent. They are to be arrows shot forth way beyond your own life. And they have to develop character, learning to make the choices that are biblical and right over what they feel like doing. That's the millennial and now whatever they're going to call it, Z generation or whatever. That's not the norm today. That comes through discipline, communication, training, a lot of work on the part of parents. Length that extends to the point where one's training and preparation for life is done or very near conclusion. Parental responsibility, according to Ephesians 6, 3 and 4. Train up a child that's Proverbs. Fathers, bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The idea of training is every facet of development of a child. Consistent discipline. Folks, I don't care what the world says. Loving, communicative discipline is absolutely essential. And a child is not done with discipline at the end of the sixth grade. Sorry, teens. Now, when did your father stop disciplining you? I'm not going to tell you. It's embarrassing. Anyway, we'll move on. There were a couple of times when I was as big as my dad that I mouthed off. I took a course in astronomy in the next few minutes and saw the stars. No, I wasn't that bad. But you know what I learned? Not going to mouth off to Mom. I was so sick of myself when I did that. And I thank my dad. You know, he already had my heart, but, you know, flesh is still there. And I didn't know what would happen, as I said, if I had to go home from college. I just didn't want to think about the possibility. He said, your dad must have been a mean dad. He's the most loving man you've ever met. Mild-mannered, godly man. But he meant business. No liar was going to be tolerated in his home. You weren't going to show disrespect, period. Because it's the right thing. We love God. Consistent teaching and love. Know the Word of God. Get help on teaching principles. It's all important. You don't just impose, by the way, courtship principles on an 18-year-old kid that you don't have their heart and you don't have much of a relationship with them. It's not going to work. You got to develop this. Like I said, I talked to little Elizabeth when she was 5 years old. I did it for the rest of them. And Hannah Lynn can tell you, Papa's been talking to her about all this, right? And have you given your heart to your daddy? Yeah, she really has. And so it's important. I mean, she's 12. I mean, she's way past. She's an old gal now, you know. These things need to be done early on. Develop character and communication skills. Look at Ephesians 4. The last 7 or 8 verses there will really help you in communication skills. And I meet every week with my mothers, 52 weeks a year, unless it's a holiday. And we go through different phases of childhood development. And one of the things I tell the moms all the time is not one day without knowing your child's heart. Not one day are they private and off from you. Whatever it takes, you got to get down to who they are every day. Don't have locks on the doors. They cannot be private. They cannot escape. There can't be technology that they escape to. They've got to be part of your life and you part of them every day, and moms have got to do it. Now I'm getting off the subject, but it is the subject. Get your child's heart. Get your child's heart. Little advice on how to get your child's heart. Give your heart first. How do you give your heart? You know, parents have a hard time being honest. Who are you? You know, when you're walking with God, you're not afraid to be who you are. You know, I remember my mother at fifth grade. She'd be asking me to pray for her. She would share her heart, and she'd ask me for counsel of all things at fifth grade. I remember that. She'd write it down. I'd love to get that book. I wonder if she ever wrote anything down. She sure acted like she was listening to me. But anyway, and she would let me know what she went through. She was orphaned at 14, lived by herself and her brother without any adult. I mean, all these things. I knew my mother. I knew exactly who she was. She would let me know when it wasn't a good day. She was asking God to work. She didn't want to be that way because sometimes she'd be discouraged. And actually, I learned to counsel a lot because my mother was a real person. My dad was a real person. He was a private person, but very open. He just made himself be open. You give your heart, and your kids all of a sudden realize, wow, my parent really values me because they're not living behind a wall. How many of you, don't answer this, but how many of you don't really know everything about your parents? If we were asking a history of your parents, you'd have a hard time coming up with them. That's common today. So you give your heart to get their heart. How can they learn to communicate their innermost feelings if you don't do it first? Think about that. That's really big. Now, you've got to, during the young, as teens, you've got to develop these relationships. Father-son, mother-daughter are relationships that prepare for their own sense of maleness, male leadership, and being a helpmate. Their confidence as a man, as a woman, the same gender are very important. If a father does not encourage his son, communicate with his son, approve of his son, if his son isn't doing well, constructively help him but not get down on him, if that son is comfortable with the father, that son is going to have a sense of confidence that will lead him to confidence in the Lord. The mother-daughter relationship is one that is often missed. There's a lot of insecurity among gals because there's really only room for one lady in the kitchen, you know. And so as a girl gets older, there can be conflict between mom and daughter. You've got to learn to communicate the same way, develop the skills, encourage them, make them a confidant as they're getting older in an appropriate timing and in ways, and communicate and develop that strong relationship where you believe in them by the grace of God and they know it, and they'll be much stronger to be the kind of a woman they ought to be in marriage. The opposite gender is for relationships. The father-daughter, that's so important that there is a warm relationship, appropriate relationship, where the father leads. The daughter really does understand. I don't understand how a young lady can leave the home of a Christian couple, the dad's a Christian and knows what's right, not dressed appropriately. I don't blame the girl. I blame the dad. I mean, honestly, that's a pretty simple one. And explain and love and explain. You're going to have to maybe pay some money for some different clothes. It doesn't matter. But you're going to teach a girl what is appropriate and how to be careful and really love on her and get very close to her. And it's worth the time and investment. I can't tell you the amount of money I spent on spending time with my daughters. Up until my kids got married, I never went anywhere without one of my children because I wanted to take that time. It's worth it. So some things to think about. Now let's get down to period number two, the road to courtship. The road to courtship. As you're getting closer, parents, it's okay to talk about these things. It's even, you know, your high schooler, though they're not going to date, nor is it going to be the time they're going to find God's will. It's okay for them to communicate. You know, that girl really is impressive. Yeah, that's right. But also, I think she's a little wily here. You know, you can have some great conversations if they're committed not to getting anything going. It's good. And then starting with little, I would pray with my kids as they went to bed, and we always would pray for God's will. My daughters loved it. My boys hated it. You know, they just thought, oh, yuck. Worked out well. We just kept praying about it anyway. They got over it. It's amazing. They got over it very well. And so pray openly. And then when they become a young adult, like they're in college and they begin to actually start considering someone, really pray about with them. Don't just shoot down an idea to shoot it down. My mother did that, of course, because we were in that position, which I honored her on that. But it's good to communicate and pray about it. And there should be a regular surrender to the perfect will of God. And so guide your kids and make it clear that this is very important to you and not to be afraid to communicate. Very important next point. Avoid a shopping mentality. When you get kids in college, you know what I'm talking about. Avoid a shopping mentality, okay? Parents and child need to look for clear supernatural leading from the Lord. I've had mothers come in without husbands, which I appreciate them wanting my counsel, in regard to something like this. And so I remember one time a mother would come in, and she came in, and she said, there's four possibilities I have for my son. I said, you know, this discussion, we can just leave it there. If there are four, we haven't found the right one, and it wasn't any of the four. And I said, you'll know. She came in a while later. She says, whoa. Well, my Lord's opened my eyes and opened my son's eyes. What about this gal? And I said, well, that's a possibility. Now, you pray about it. And sure enough, they're married happily today. That was years ago. And the Lord was in it. So don't shop. I tell the guys all the time, don't be looking at every gal as a potential, you know, somebody off your grocery list there, you know. Just appreciate all of the young ladies in the school or young men in the school or wherever you're at. And then God will open your eyes. It's so interesting. Somebody that they've been to school with, you know, when you go to school with someone, you know their weaknesses and their strengths. It's sort of something mysterious about somebody you don't know that might just be a little more exciting. But I have told the kids that oftentimes they'll even get into seminary, and all of a sudden, one of the gals they hadn't even thought about, boom, the veil goes off, and it's like, whoa, where did she come from? Well, she's been there for 6 years or, you know, 5 years, but God has all of a sudden made it clear, and it's so exciting. It's so neat. Now, you know what happens? You hear the testimony of the girl, shoom, same thing happened oftentimes that way also. When there are some leading specifically, it's wise to get counsel from spiritual authority as well as trusted people who know the potential person well. I'm speaking here of parents getting the counsel. And kids, if you get counsel, don't do it with other young people. Only if your parents suggest something. Your parents need to be the first line. Remember, you're not going to initiate anything. You don't want to get into the social intrigue, even in college. And then, you know, you ought to talk to your pastor. You ought to talk to people. That's why I get called all the time, being in the role that I am at college, because I'll have some insight. I'm very careful, but you do the different checking, and that's very important. The child needs to communicate openly with parents and trusted counselors, but be careful to keep it confidential. Now, one thing we've had to do, because we have all of these young people there in our church, is that we ask courtships to stay confidential. It's not a rule that has to be followed, but it can become a big social pressure. And the fact is, remember, courtship is to find out for sure. Now, you don't want to enter into courtship unless you know pretty well, but still, it's to find out for sure this is God's will. And a couple of situations where it was very clearly not God's will, a parent sort of rushed into it, and they got out of it, nobody knew. It was a good deal, you know. And, you know, I had, like with my oldest daughter, I had two really fine fathers ask me about their sons for their daughter. In one case, I'd never told my daughter. They're still in our church. I just didn't, I knew it wasn't the right thing. In the other case, I did talk to her and led into that conversation pretty quickly. I knew what she would say, but they weren't in our church, so I could do that. But, you know, nobody ever knew about that. So, you know, good friends with everybody. And that's a blessing. So you'll have to decide, but you don't want human pressure. Now let's get to the one we want to be talking about. Period number three is courtship. But that road to courtship is very important. All right. Courtship's purpose is to confirm God's will. Remember that? Concerning whom to marry while maintaining all purity of heart, mind, and body. Now you say, how long does courtship go? There is no magic length. It varies, that's the blank there, according to the situation and God's leading in the hearts of those involved. Distance and accessibility are factors. However, today with FaceTime and Skype and all that has changed that equation even. It needs to be short enough not to produce an undue emotional attachment, but long enough to gain full confidence in God's will. Now, note the last line. Parents need to be committed to whatever personal sacrifice it takes to get the matter solved as quickly as God permits. So I don't know what to say on time exactly, because every situation is different. But it doesn't take long for a relationship to really develop, and you can put the young people in a really awkward position if you start getting concerned about it. You'll know pretty quickly into it. And so as you've prayed about it before you even get into it, and really seek God's will, and then as things develop, you really don't want that to go on overly long until engagement comes. If both sets of parents have strong confidence in God's will, then I would say engagement ought to be sooner than later. I would say most courtships in our situations last anywhere from like 2 months to three max, unless, again, they're not around each other. Sometimes it'll be a month or weeks, all depending upon how much they are together. If they're together a number of times, well, then I want that courtship to go super long. If they really know, then there's no reason not to get engaged and then go on. So let me give you some details. And again, none of this is the law of the Medes and Persians. I'm just giving you my experience. I'm practical now. Remember, the principles are what I wanted you to get. The father of the young man leads in initiation. An awareness of God's leading to a potential wife becomes apparent to parents of a young man and the young man himself. Upon discussion and parental consensus, the father of the young man approaches the father of the girl. If there is not a father able to function in this way, their pastor or a trusted spiritual leader could be a substitute. You might ask, can the man do it himself? Yes, technically, but it is God's way through Old and New Testament was there was always someone else that did the initial negotiations. There's a lot of emotions on the line. Also, it's very difficult for the father of the girl to look that guy in the eye and really deal with it objectively. It's a just difficult thing all the way around. We don't want the young man to get hurt and unnecessarily, and so I believe strongly in the father initiating it, and I've done it as pastor. I got to do it now for a young man who's coming up here, or some other family member, such as maybe the uncle that really has helped the family if there's no father, or someone that you trust. That works out well. But it's got to be somebody that you really trust. And so that's the nerve-wracking moment, I'm telling you, as my boys asked me to call. That was always, I think I got more nervous than my sons did, in making that call. An awareness of God's leading to a potential husband might become apparent to parents of a young lady or to the young lady herself. Parents and daughter may discuss the matter. Note, however, that they should wait for God to lead further and make the parents of the young man or the young man aware of God's leading. It is vital that the young lady and parents rest fully in the Lord to intervene and not to try to gain the young man's attention. It takes waiting upon the Lord. Because what you're going to get into? You're going to get into even a nice form of flirting. Getting attention or parents maneuvering. Let's just believe God. My youngest sister is married to Pastor Mark Gilmore. His dad was an evangelist and is evangelist. And we began to be aware of him as he was attending our church. He was in a sister college there, Maranatha at that time. We didn't have our college. And I began to really sense, I think this is the perfect guy for my daughter. She was teaching at another college at the time, and we did have interaction with the family, but we just waited. And I'll never forget, I was at Camp Joy in Whitewater, Wisconsin, doing something, and we began to find out that God was working in the dad and the boy's heart, and it was a thrill to see God answer prayer. My sister wasn't even around, and it all worked out beautifully. Eight children later. Is it eight or nine? Nine. I thought I wasn't right. Once you get over eight, nine children, and they're a tremendous blessing to us still there on staff. Now, next paragraph. The father of a young girl should not allow courtship to begin unless he sees clearly that a young man and his father have prayed and sought God's will concerning the matter, have examined the character of the girl, and are confident in God's leading to the point of courtship. Ask questions, dads of daughters. Why? You're not just shopping here, are you? You don't say that, but that's what you're thinking. And I'm telling you, when the dad says, we've really prayed about this, and my son, I made him wait for some months here, but he is absolutely committed. Here's what he really thinks about your daughter. Well, I'm listening to that, And so you've got, and then I think, before anything, and I'll have it here about the dad's got to get with the guy. But you got to ask the questions. He and his wife then should spend time praying and seeking counsel before they approach their daughter about the possibility. Once they have freedom, they should get their daughter's heart and then together seek the Lord for clear direction for the beginning of the courtship. With Hannah Lynn's mother, we got leadership. My son, all of a sudden, the veil went off of his eyes, and he began to see. And so we talked about it. We prayed about it. My wife really got involved. And so finally, I made the call, and they took some time on it, which was good. And we were down in Atlanta, Georgia, on a visit to my mother-in-law's. And it was interesting. We were somewhere, and my son, her daddy, led somebody to the Lord. I don't remember all that happened. But right at that time, I said, I don't know how this connects, but I just know they're going to say yes. I just know. And it was at that very moment that God had put it in their hearts that it was the right thing. And one of their burdens was that my son was a soul winner, and he is a soul winner. She can tell you that. And so he called pretty shortly after that and said it was at this time. God gave us peace. God gave us peace. And seven children later. Here we are, you know, it's good. Okay, the father of the young lady leads in confirmation. Now, the father of the young man leads in initiation. But I'm telling you, dad of a girl, you keep this thing proper. That girl is yours, not that young whippersnapper. Now, if you're letting this happen, then you need to think highly of it. But still, you lay down, how much can they communicate? How much can they text? How do chaperones work? That's got to be under your leadership. Better figure it out ahead of time. If the father of the girl approves, both families begin to work together to discern God's will. Father of the girl plays a key role since he is the one who must give away his daughter. Note this next one. The time in which the young man and the young lady are together is exclusively in the presence of one of the families. The interaction is not only in specially planned events, but also in the realm of normal everyday life. Now, I say exclusively, when they're at home and all, there needs to be family. You can have other chaperones, but it needs to be primarily, would probably be a better word there. Why? Because siblings also very important in discerning God's will here. Plus, do you realize a proper courtship and engagement brings wonderful family relations for a lifetime? These are going to be aunts and uncles to the children. There needs to be harmony at family get-togethers. There needs to be a oneness of purpose. So the more the family is drawn in, the better it is. The input of siblings is very important. Parental knowledge of the potential mate is more important than the young person's knowledge of each other. You need to know that they have a sense that they really can love each other. But I'm telling you, as sets of parents, you better know God's hand is in this. It takes time. I sort of enjoyed it. I had to take my wife on a lot of dates I hadn't done for a while, you know. And it's a little costly. You might want to get a war chest, you know. But it was more fun. We had more fun together. I really enjoyed the courtship and engagement times. It was just, you know, it just built. And I've got a relationship with all of those in-laws now. It's just wonderful. And we, you know, look back at those special times together. The young man and young lady are never alone together, including being alone in a crowd of strangers. This is not only for physical protection, but emotional as well. That doesn't mean they cannot talk alone, because they're going to need some time. But remember, they're not developing a relationship. They're finding out God's will. So you can be around the corner and doing something else. I mean, the point is, but there's just full protection. You say, Pastor Van Gelderen, that's old-fashioned. I confess it is. But I'm telling you, I don't trust. I remember my oldest daughter, she got married, and she got in the car, and off they went on their honeymoon, and it just occurred to her, there's no chaperone in here. You know, she said, this is really amazing, you know, and it was just so sweet. You know, they had never been in an improper alone situation until they got married. And you know what? They did quite well. And every one of, and they're married 15, 17 years, I'm not sure. And so It's really wonderful. The young man and woman do not touch at all. Just draw the line. Both individuals clearly understand that they are seeking God's will and do not want to defraud one another in any way. The young lady still belongs completely to her father. The young man has no rights toward her. They are still saving themselves for the one who is to be their mate. A great aid to this is that everything occurs or is spoken is discussed with that young person's parents. It's got to be, you've got to take a lot of time, parents, to talk with your kids alone. Let them share their hearts. Just, you know, aren't there times you get crises in life? Somebody goes to the hospital, things just sort of go to the wind, you do what you have to do. Well, this is a positive crisis. It's a lot of fun, but it's a sacrifice. You're going to have to go, it'd be really good for you to see the parents' home and what they're like. It's going to cost a little money to travel. It's going to cost a little money to do something. It's going to take time you don't have, but it's worth it. It's worth it. This period ought not to begin without a good measure of peace and confidence in God's leading. It's best you know how. You sense God's in it. But courtship is to finalize it. Okay, that's the purpose. God's will, God's will. All right, the fourth period, engagement. When it's clear on both sides, obviously then and remember, engagement's goal is to prepare for marriage. The length is only as long as it takes to fully prepare for the marriage, not too short as to feel rushed, and not too long as to be frustrated. Remember, in engagement, they still aren't married. In the old-fashioned way, the man went off to get the home prepared. So if you have them together all the time, for a long period of time, they're going to be frustrated and could be in danger. So you've really got to seek God's will. I have found that the average amount of time that's happened with our graduates and kids out of our church and all with courtship, I've just watched it now over the years, is anywhere from 6 to 8 months if they are in same proximity. That's normal. And it has been done in 3 and 4 months engagements. And it's been fine. It's been definitely long enough. So it all depends. That's why, again, there's no rule of thumb, but you've got to be wise about that. And I do talk in my pre-marriage counseling with the young people that don't be frustrated. You're not married, and there's only to some extent that you can go in relationship building without being married. Understand that. Details. This period is to be understood in the context of biblical betrothal, unlike our common engagements today, which are more like a serious trial period, 40% of which are broken. This commitment of marrying is very serious, to be broken only in the rarest of cases. Now, let me say that if you realize you did blow it, still better not to get married. But proper courtship and wisdom in getting into engagement, we have almost no engagements broken. Now, we've had a couple which have been very wise, but that was way back. We haven't had recently that happen. But if it needs to be, Dad, do it. Okay, so I don't want to just feel like, well, I'm bound, they got engaged. And all of a sudden you find out something you didn't know. Well, you're going to have to evaluate that. However, there should be instead a commitment and a real sense of peace because God's hand's been there. This is a time in which the young people do not have to be insecurely focused on maintaining this relationship. They wouldn't worry about the person they're engaged to looking at anybody else, you know. But rather, they can wholeheartedly prepare for marriage, building up their knowledge and care for one another with all confidence and security. The decision to marry is made together by the parents and young people. It is based on confidence in God's will, confidence in the character of the future mate, confidence in the rightness of the situation, and confidence that no biblical principles are being violated. Now, I would not, parents, and I wouldn't as a pastor. If the other parents aren't for it, no way. Just no way. Of course, if there's divorce involved, there's no way. Just no way. Those are biblical principles. And if the spouse, if the prospective spouse is clearly not in the will of God, no way. It shouldn't have ever gotten that far. There has to be approval of both parents. You say, what about an unsaved parent? God's able to work that out. Be patient. I'm telling you, young people, to ride over a parent, you will spend a lifetime of regrets. If you have to wait a couple of years, wait a couple of years, but don't do that. Well, the time of preparation begins during engagement for the young man. He wins the young lady's heart. That's why you want this to be the right thing. They develop communication skills as best as they can and understanding and develop a oneness of spirit that needs to be spiritually. They need to be, and by the way, they're still under chaperonage all through this time. But they ought to have, they can go soul winning with folks. You can have a threesome and soul winning. That's fine. Further character development with input and direction from future father-in-law. There's a lot that can be learned in communication with the other family. Finish schooling and training. Prepare his house. In other words, get yourself in good financial order. Don't start your marriage with huge school debt. Don't do that. It'd be better to wait some months, pay off the debt, then get married. And then prepare for the wedding ceremonies and honeymoon. That's the least important. Now, let me say one thing that I found that's been a good thing is that if you're the young man, it may be that if your wife's parents live somewhere else, if you ask them to come and visit them without your prospective wife there, spend some time just getting to know the siblings and the parents. That will go a long way. A number of our folks have done that. For the young lady, prepare to love and help the young man. Develop communication skills and understanding. Develop oneness of spirit. And parents, you can help with this. You need to, you need to get with the program. No kid, even when they get engaged, is fully prepared. You need to still keep working with them and helping them. Finish schooling and training. Prepare to leave home. Prepare for the new home. And then prepare for the wedding ceremonies. And girls, be careful. Don't just be in love with the idea of love and a wedding. You won't even remember your wedding, okay? It's the man. It's your life. And certainly prepare, but don't let yourself have a superficial glitter and, you know, just be totally enamored by all of that. That should be for the glory of God, and your wedding ceremony should not glorify you. How you dress and everything about it ought to glorify God. And everybody ought to leave there being more committed to serve the Lord than ever. What I just said was huge. That is really important. For parents, make sure all parent-child problems of the past are solved. Did you hear that? There ought not to be any bitternesses. There ought not be any. You know, maybe Dad, you didn't communicate. You still don't communicate real well with your daughter. She ought not get married until you break through on that. She's going to do the same thing to her husband. Now, that should have been decided before engagement, but I'm just saying if you sort of wake up that I haven't solved this, well, then solve it. Make sure that the couple's communicating, and parents need to share with their future in-laws awareness of the intricacies of their sons and daughters. The day before our marriage, my future father-in-law sat down with me and said, well, you know, he just loved my wife. She was the oldest, and she was very mature and all, but then he said, you know, there's a few things I haven't totally won with yet. Well, I said, okay, what are those? I got so tickled about it and wasn't terrible things at all. And so I said, okay, but it was helpful. It was helpful. So I told my wife, I said, well, here's my job. You know, I told her right up front. She laughed about it. And but you can learn a lot. Draw the future in-law into the family. Share marriage life counsel with the couple. Develop further association with in-law family. The more you can work on that, that's why courtship is beautiful. There's no alien. I'm telling you, if there's alienation with the families, it's not the right thing. Or it's not been done the right way. Not at all. This should be a beautiful oneness. Now, you might have a rebel in the family not walking with God. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people that have a sincere, and even unsaved people that have open hearts. You want to draw them in. Prepare for the child to leave home. There's just a lot of things you got to do before they get married. Think it all through. And then, obviously, prepare for the wedding ceremony. And then for the church, pastoral counseling and accountability, which churches do, and it's very important you take that seriously. Ensure that the couple is successful in problem-solving communication. And that's something we really deal with. Prepare for the wedding ceremony. Now, that's where the pastor and the church takes it seriously. In other words, we have a guideline booklet that big, and we do everything to help, and we give all kinds of, we take time. I take time even in my marriage counseling, and I work hard. I run the rehearsal. I mean, we're going to get this thing right because it's a testimony for the Lord, and so we're going to work on that. Time together continues to be characterized by much time with families. A young person alone with the in-law parents' family is excellent. I already mentioned that. The couple is together enough to achieve the purpose of preparation for marriage, but not so much as to fall into meeting selfish needs or developing a romantic concept of love. You can get bad patterns. Too much time together can be harmful spiritually. More than ever, the couple ought not to be out alone. Listen, I have met many a Christian couple in the past that had a good testimony but got close to marriage, and they were so in love with each other that there wasn't protection and they injured themselves, and that's a tragedy. That ought not happen. However, time together in private is necessary at this stage and is best achieved in close proximity to the family in a room out on the porch for a walk on the family's property. This is the most dangerous time for physical defrauding since the couple is growing together emotionally and the urge for expression of physical affection will be growing. Family observation will help the couple avoid that which they would later regret. The couple ought to continue to refrain from all touching. There are just different philosophies out there where engagement is different. I think engagement clearly is the most dangerous time. That's where you got to draw the line, personally. I've been at this a long time, and so I highly, highly encourage that. Reminder, the individuals are not yet each other's. They still belong to their parents, especially the young lady. They must be careful not to defraud each other physically, but they do have the right and responsibility to develop a deeper knowledge of each other, a oneness of spirit. Parental involvement, guidance, and awareness is still very important, beneficial, and desirable in this stage. And then period number 5 is marriage. What's the goal? Serve God together through pleasing one another, rearing a godly seed, and ministering in His service till death do us part. And amen. All right. Well, 2 minutes before 12. you folks have hung in there. And again, I've given you the principles. Let's go over the principles of marriage again. Lots of marriage now, not courtship. Marriage, what's the first one? Partnership, a oneness. The next one? Promise, that deep covenant for a lifetime. Number 3, procreation, a godly seed, the right kind of relationship that will continue the faith of God moving forward. And picture, a beautiful picture of Christ in the church. Now let's do the courtship principles. Number 1 is purity, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Number 2, parental responsibility, the key one. Children give their hearts to their parents that they will not get a relationship going until everything's set in motion the right way. Number 3, preparedness. Be ready to be able within a year to be prepared to be actually a husband or wife. And number 4, patience, waiting on God. Now, that's what I want you to remember. I've given you some details. I've given you things that I have learned over the years, both as pastor and as parent, that can give you some basic guidelines according to these principles. But, folks, is God big enough to bring the right one the right way without scars and hurts? Is He able to do that?
Amen.
Is He? Young people, is God able to meet the deepest need of your heart? Absolutely. This is where you're going to learn to wait on God. You're going to learn that there is a great God in heaven, and He loves you, and He will take care of you perfectly. And so these are biblical principles that I trust you'll put deep within your heart. Parents, just have a good time over the next months of talking with your kids about this, little on up. Get things settled in your hearts, and it just will be a wonderful thing. I mean, it's an exciting adventure. People say, well, is courtship as exciting as dating? Man, it's a lot more exciting. I'm telling you, it's got heart-stopping moments. It's just amazing. It's just fun. I'm telling you, I've had more fun in all the courtships of my family than I ever thought would have. And no, nobody's ever been through a courtship ever said it was boring. It's perfect. And God will work. So, Pastor, I'll let you finish this out as you deem best here.